Welcome to the Next Gear on Podtech.net. I'm Matt Kelly. On today's show, part two of a two-part series examining vehicle-to-grid, or V2G, technology, where PHEVs, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, plug in to the electric grid and use their excess battery power to handle periods of peak demand. It's a technology more and more utility companies are exploring, and one that I have to admit has me quite excited. And joining me is Sven Thiessen. He is supervisor of PG&E's Electric Drive Group. It's a pleasure having him on the podcast. Sven, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matt. I'm quite excited to be here.
First of all, why don't you tell me again your official title and what your role in your capacity is?
My official title is supervisor of PG&E's Electric Drive Group within the Clean Air Transportation Program. And my group assesses electric drive technologies and all of the exciting associated technologies with that, including things like fast charging, vehicle to grid, communication both between the utility, the vehicle, and the consumer.
How excited are you about this technology as an environmentalist?
Me personally, I've opted to risk my whole career on it. I was, as I said, in environmental engineering here at PG&E, and have opted to, having seen the benefits of plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles, to go to this program.
Sounds like there's a lot going on at PG&E within the realm of this technology.
As you may be aware, we sent out to our ratepayers to encourage them to get plug-in hybrid vehicles over 5 million bill inserts, asking them to ask the automobile manufacturers to bring plug-in hybrids more quickly to the market. So we definitely want these vehicles out there, and we want them out there, you know, as soon as possible. They have the great multi-benefit of not only when you have a plug-in hybrid, or, and I want to expand this also to electric vehicles, that the emissions for us breathers, you know, the people that stand on the ground and as all of us do and have to breathe automobile exhaust, they're much cleaner from a tailpipe emission perspective. Then when you look at the CO2 footprint, the global warming gas, when you take electricity generated, and particularly here in Northern California, our electrical grid, the way we produce electricity, has a much smaller footprint than petroleum. And what's very important to me, because I come from an environmental background, I've been an environmental professional for almost 20 years, and realized if I really wanted to make change would be to move to work on electric vehicles, because it affects all of us. Electrical production is actually getting cleaner through renewable portfolio standards versus out of petroleum production. Unfortunately, the CO2 footprint is actually getting worse as we have to use things like Canadian oil sands.
Such a pleasure to hear PG&E actually help be a cause for lobbying its ratepayers to demand that car manufacturers build and develop these vehicles. What do you think the role of an electric utility is in trying to demand this technology come to market sooner?
I wouldn't say it's demand, it's assist. We've extended our hands to all the major automobile manufacturers to assist them with in developing the technology necessary for smooth operation. For example, we don't want you to walk outside when you drive your vehicle home. We don't particularly want you to go outside and plug the vehicle in and the vehicle immediately to begin charging, because then you'd be using electricity essentially at peak, assuming it's 6-7 o'clock in the evening. What we'd rather you do is you walk outside, you plug your vehicle in, and nothing happens until 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then, depending on where the demand occurs, we will selectively recharge that vehicle, and it will occur in a series of cycling, so we don't suddenly have this burst of power going out to all the vehicles. It'll be like we'll do this region first, then the next region, then, you know, another part of our service territory. So we'll be able to apportion the load appropriately to maximize electrical production at off peak. But in your house, you won't see any of that. In your house, the way we envision it, you'll go drive home, plug your car in, and walk in, and there'll be a nice bar or some sort of like a power strip, or it'll be on your PDA that will show the state of charge in your vehicle, roughly how many miles you have left, and then a little green button that will, and it'll say, we're going to charge at 1 o'clock in the morning. And a little green button that will indicate you can essentially override that 1 o'clock in the morning charge if you have to go to a baseball game. So you'll still be able to use the vehicle appropriately and as a plug-in hybrid, but we will cooperatively, we giving the user reduced off-peak rates. The ease of not having to go out and put their own timer on the vehicle or, you know, on the wall plug. But we think this is a long, and as I said, we're talking to the automobile manufacturers. It's a long-term integration. So we're looking at 5 to 10 years. Like I said, you'll come home, plug your car in, you'll know the state of charge, you'll be able to get out of that state of charge. In the morning, you'll wake up, your car will be fully charged, you'll drive to work, you'll re-plug in, and depending on the state of charge and what the grid predicts they'll need in terms of electrical energy, we may actually fill your vehicle up with additional electricity in the morning and then pull that addition that we just put in out and then maybe some more. And again, you would be able to see and monitor all this and control it through the internet, through your cell phone, through your PDA. And if you're going outside of what you had told us was your normal driving pattern, so say to the grocery store, or suddenly you had to pick up kids or run some other errand, you would be able to exit the system and stop uploading energy to the grid. So that's the way the system's working, or envisioned to work, and we're looking at various technologies to enable that.
It does have a lot of components to it. I mean, we're talking about, A, the generation of electricity, first off, the creation of these vehicles to store this electricity, as well as the plug-in capabilities during certain times of the day to draw that power back out. When you look at it, it really isn't that complicated.
It's all about communication. It really boils down to being able to communicate amongst all the parties involved and take it from right now when you look at generation and supply and demand, and you have a couple hundred power plants supplying the demand for Northern California at different times, and they're told what to do by ISO. When you expand that to these couple hundred major plants plus several million vehicles, it just gets more complicated. But again, it's just communication and being able to control those vehicles through the internet, Wi-Fi. We've got a couple other things we're looking at right now. It's just simply talking to the vehicles, talking to the owners, and talking to the utility.
And it really has the possibility of changing, A, the way we drive and the air we breathe.
I don't think, this is the thing that it took me a while to convince my wife, but she got it. And that was, it's not really going to change the way we drive. It's going to be seamless, and you won't have to do anything unless you make a change in your daily drive. You get to work, you plug it in. That's all you do. You leave work, you unplug it, you drive home, you plug it in. That's all you do. Only if you want to change your driving pattern do you hit the little green button that says, you know, take me out of my normal mode. Certainly it will change the air quality, both the criteria pollutants, that's what we breathe, and also our CO2 footprint. But as someone who's got a plug-in hybrid, we don't find it, and cell phone users, we don't find it that unusual that our parents didn't plug their phones in every evening, and now we do. It's just, you know, something we do differently. But absolutely, the benefits to air quality, both the criteria pollutants at the ground level and the CO2, which is, again, our main concern about global warming, and also national security and our reliance on foreign fuels are all addressed through plug-in hybrid electric vehicles and this vehicle-to-grid, grid-to-vehicle communication.
The electric grid is fairly clean compared to other states. How will this technology help make it greener? And are you studying other forms of electric generation, such as wind power and solar power, to help augment this technology?
You got it on the head. The sad thing about wind power is that it generally blows at night. So if you want to generate electricity through wind, you're not going to see your blades spinning during the daytime. They're going to be spinning at night because that, in California, is when the wind blows. What that means is, where do we put this electricity? Because if you consider the grid to be a highway, no one's using the grid at 3 o'clock in the morning, but at 6 o'clock in the evening, everyone's using it, and everybody needs electricity. So our people's vehicles, by charging up at night, they will essentially be harvesting that wind power and filling up on green electrons. And then during the daytime, when we need that additional electricity, rather than having to import it from somewhere far away and all those associated losses, we will be able to upload power to the grid locally with those green electrons that we harvested the evening before.
And in terms of solar power, are you trying to harness that technology for this smart grid idea?
Absolutely. That's more at the residential side, and it has to do more with, if you have a vehicle plugged in that has capacity in the battery and your solar system's running and we don't need that electricity at, say, a noon, but we know we're going to need it later on, then you could route that solar power into the battery, save it up, and then again upload it at 6, 7 o'clock in the evening when we really do need it.
And I understand that PG&E is studying the feasibility of using this V2G technology and G2V technology for fleet vehicle usage. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The way we envision it will be first at major parking lots with fleet vehicles that will, again, charge up at home, drive, and upload at work, but you won't have the vehicle-to-grid capability at everyone's homes, at least not at the beginning, because it makes sense to aggregate them, first of all, around a certain point, and then, once we've got that technology well understood, then to go to individual homes. One thing the solar is very interesting, because with the peak occurring more sharply, it's almost better to have the solar panel oriented so it generates the majority of electricity in later on during the day, which may actually result in less electricity being generated, but it's more of a factor of when it's needed than how much is needed, unfortunately. So I must admit it, I have a personal request to all of you listeners out there, and that's to not run your electric dryers at between, say, 4 in the afternoon and 7 p.m. in the evening, particularly on hot summer days.
What are the limits of the infrastructure and this technology, and what needs to happen in order for that to be overcome?
In terms of vehicles plugging in, provided they plug in at night, we're going to need to see a massive increase in electric plug-in hybrid vehicles on the order of millions. And that's not going to happen for 20-some years, provided the majority of people plug in at night. So right now, there's no limitations from a vehicle perspective. We just need to get the infrastructure and the communication infrastructure put in place. One thing that I'm often asked about, and that's the recyclability of the batteries, but one of the other things that I'm very much excited about is, just like a cell phone, you have, when you first buy it, it will operate for 3 days, and then 2 years later, it'll operate for, you know, 2 days, and then it slowly loses its maximum state of charge over time. We envision the same thing happening with batteries, but instead of taking the battery out of the automobile and then directly recycling it, what we envision is taking those used batteries and giving them a secondary life as a stationary battery. So constructing a building, or at least say a shed, with 10 or 20 X electric vehicle batteries that are in turn filled up during the nighttime with green electrons and then used at peak time to upload to the grid rather than having to import power from far away.
What else excites you in this realm of technology right now in the industry?
I think it's the evolution of batteries, communication, and our customers. Our customers in Northern California want us to be as green as possible. They want to know that they're doing the right thing, and we're just trying to help them as much as possible by driving this technology. PG&E's got this wonderful, in addition to the light-duty work, we're doing some medium and heavy-duty truck work, where right now, if there's a power outage, we'll be actually able to take electricity off from the vehicle's battery and provide electricity to the area that's down.
And your final thoughts on vehicle-to-grid technology, its promise for the environment as well as the consumer?
I think it's one technology that has the win-win-win across every board. The consumer gets cheaper transportation costs, significantly cheaper transportation costs. We do great things for national security by reducing our dependence on foreign oil. We clean up both our criteria pollutants, which are the ones we breathe in at low level, and we also do a great job of reducing our CO2 footprint.
My thanks to Sven Thiessen, the electric vehicle guru at PG&E. It's a pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Great, Matt. Thank you very much.
If it's technology driving innovation, it's the next gear on podtech.net. I'm Matt Kelly.